Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com and CPRMetro.org. Well, we have a very wonderful and informative show, and I hope that it is also inspirational. Our first guest is Sufyan Bin Uzair. He's the editor of Brave New World, bravenewworld.in, a progressive web journal. He's from northern India, and he's a young man. He's authored a book called Sufism, A Brief History, and he is very articulate, very well versed on the subjects of a progressive nature, and I think very mature for his very young age. So right after the break, we'll be back with Sufyan, but after Sufyan Bin Uzair, we'll have a returning guest, Ralph Poynter, who is the husband of attorney and political prisoner Lynn Stewart. But after all these years, we'll also have Lynn Stewart on because she was released from prison on compassionate release, and her story is one that needs to be told over and over and over again. For one thing, it's a courageous story of persistence and struggle, and for another thing, it's very inspirational. So I have two inspirational guests on today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Sufyan, and right after Sufyan, we'll have Lynn and Ralph. Sufyan Bin Uzair, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
And where are you speaking from? From where are you speaking, I should say?
I'm currently in my home. That's in India, the northern part of the country.
In what part of the country?
The northern part of the country.
In India. So this may be the first person from India that, at least that was in India, that we've had on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Thank goodness for our technology these days, huh?
Yeah, well, it's an honor to be on your show, and I hope your audience doesn't have a problem with my accent.
I think it's perfect, so I can understand you perfectly. I don't think there's going to be any problem with it. So, Sufyan, on Facebook, you contacted me to see if you could be on the show and to talk about your website. So tell my listeners about your website and what's important to you and there on your website, and why do you have it?
All right. First up, the first website that we have is called Brave New World. And let me start it off first, that majority of our readership, as well as the majority of contributors and writers that we have, are from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So we focus on progressive issues, mostly foreign policy and diplomacy, as there are separate sections for gender and environment issues as well. It's titled Brave New World, and the URL is bravenewworld.in.
.in, right?
Yeah, .in, because .com was taken, sadly.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a big Huxley fan, so I was just like adamant that I'm going to name it Brave New World,
uh-huh,
nothing else.
Well,
and
so,
it's already...
Yeah, I mean, I just recently reread Brave New World, and the parallels to what's happening today, you know, it's frightening, but it's also very amazing how prescient that Huxley was.
Correct. And Brave New World, I mean, that's one novel that whatever time or age you read in, you can draw some parallels to your times, no matter what part of the world you are in.
Right. So tell us about your website.
Yeah, right. So bravenewworld.in, and we have a, let's just say, a mediocre readership. We aren't the next New York Times or anything, but we do have a decent readership. And we do a good number of subscribers. And we try to publish one or two articles of progressive nature almost every day. And in the past, we have also featured some of your works. And I must add on a personal note that if I ever come to USA, I'll be the first person to take part in that countrywide run that you are organizing.
Oh, great. That's
very
sweet.
And if I were living in your constituency, I surely would have voted for you.
Very sweet. Thank you.
And I've recently started a new blog, which is more of my own political ramblings, but I intend to release it again for guest contributors as well. It's called Political Periscope, politicalperiscope.com.
Well, I saw on your website, like you said, issues of foreign policy, progressive issues, but there was also an article about sex trafficking in India.
Correct. Because, since I myself am based in India, and India is one country where if you are writing about the evils of the society or the issues that the society is facing, the challenges, you'll never run out of such issues because first you have trafficking and poverty, unemployment, corruption. There are a wide number of issues that you need to actually focus on. And sometimes it's like when you decide that which issue should be tackled, you'll just like be confused because if you, again, environment, there are endangered species and everything. And it's really, but then again, that's a story of almost every other country. So every country, their own challenges.
Right. Were there some victories in India around organizing against Monsanto and GMOs?
Yeah, well, there have been some victories, and I mean, let's just use that there have been some rays of hope here in India, and especially because the people are slightly touchy about anything that has anything to do with the West, if dare I say it.
Were there some farmers who committed suicide because of the... is this true that the farmers committed suicide because
Not just farmers, I mean the average common man, and it happens almost all throughout India. The nexus goes like they are first given good quality, so-called good quality seeds and fertilizers to grow crops and increase production. And then they're offered a bank loan for that to invest in agricultural machinery because roughly a decade or two ago, most of the agriculture produced in India was manual. There weren't any machinery involved. And once they are unable to repay the loan because agriculture here heavily depends on monsoons and rains and, you know, nature, how it goes. It can fail any time. So when they are unable to repay the loan, then the best option that they have is suicide, apparently. It's a sad story, but it happens on a regular basis. And with such a high population of India, I mean, people dying, they don't even make it to the front page of the newspaper, sadly.
Oh, my gosh. With 85 people in the world owning more wealth than the 3.5 billion people on the bottom, there's got to be a situation where we that aren't in those 85 families that own more wealth than half the planet, there has to be a situation when we put our feet down together and say no more. And so that's one of the reasons I like being able to talk to you and other people around the world with relative ease right now, while the government still lets us have Wi-Fi and such, is that we have to talk about ways that we can change that paradigm. How can 85 people be so oppressive to 3.5 billion people?
Absolutely. The income disparity is just a very sad reality of our world. And come to think of it, I mean, I read it somewhere on some social network. Human beings are the only creatures that pay to live on Earth. And that's just like mind-numbing, especially now that I'm still 23 and when I think of how my life is going to turn out, let's say 2 decades from now, I mean, I really, sometimes it just gets mind-numbingly confusing. It's
right. Well, we crazy. We have to figure out ways that we can change that paradigm. Obviously, these 85 people, and then if you extend it to not just 85 people, but the 1%, they own even more wealth and oppress us even more. But when you think of that, I can't believe that people are so propagandized and so oppressed that we can't work together to overthrow that paradigm.
Exactly. It's more of a vicious cycle, in my opinion. I mean, once somebody gets the power and they get rich enough, they form a part of the 1%, then there's no looking back for them. And it's like they control almost every resource, including water and oxygen for that matter.
Uh-huh.
So there's hardly anything worth doing. I mean, There's no matter what you protest about and no matter whom you vote to power and no matter how democratic the system of the country might be, it's hardly any different from a monarchy. There's just, it's more of a mirage or a facade that you're going to have a good deal of rights in a democracy. If you're a part of the 99%, your rights, they're pretty questionable with the way they are handled. And again, if you look from the west to the eastern part of the world, you might say that there's some promise in the developing countries. But here's, again, is the same story. The 1% or whatever people in power they are, with the way they control the economic, financial, and government resources, there's hardly any hope for those who are at the lower rung of the ladder. And when we look from here to the western part of the world, you might say, yeah, the developed world has at least proper healthcare and everything. But little do people here know that the, whatever healthcare you may be having, scientific development and everything is comes at a too heavy a price. It's just too costly.
Right. Well, so, and then I think that we reached some peak in the quality of healthcare, and then it's starting to decline. You know, as far as life expectancy and the rise of incidences of diabetes and other kind of what you might say Western illnesses, heart disease and things like that. But where do you find, from India, from Northern India where you are, where do you look and see that there's hope for people taking back their lives?
Hope in terms that there have been cases and the government has acted on, pardoning of the loans and everything. But yes, people do commit suicide. The hope, if you would ask me to, then hope is a rather ambiguous term. I mean, I don't
right.
really know
well,
how.
I agree. But where do you see inspiration? Like, I see a lot of inspiration coming from Latin American countries where people are working with their governments to make their lives better and have more rights and to do away with privatized water and Monsanto and things like that.
Well, that's one thing where India is doing pretty well in the sense that there isn't that much of privatization as it is in your country.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, there is hope in the sense that people are working with the government to better their lives, to seek alternate means of employment and for education, because roughly 2 decades ago, in the smaller towns of the country, whether the northern part or southern part, female kids didn't really used to go to college or anything like that. But now the trend is changing. And of course, there's still a lot needs to be done because the literacy rate isn't impressive by any standards. But more and more children are enrolling in schools and people are not dropping out of schools that much. So yes, the trend is changing. The graph is going high, but a lot needs to be done. Once again, the overpopulation is a huge drawback in such cases. Again, human resources can be a big asset, but when you have such a crowded country, no matter how much is in you invest in, there's you'll again run short of things. I mean, no matter how many buses or transport you run, you'll always find more passengers than buses and trains. So.
Right.
Things like that keep happening. No matter how many schools open, there will always be children who will not be able to gain admittance in a good school because the seats will always be short.
Oh, I just lost a connection here. Hello? Hello? Sophian?
Yeah. Hello. Can you hear me? Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Now I can, yes. So, Sophian, what do you do besides having these political websites?
For my livelihood, I run my own web design agency.
Uh-huh.
And I serve as editor for a couple of computer-related magazines. And I'm also a student of history. I authored a book back in 2012. It was about the history of Sufism. That's the mystical branch of Islam. And a couple of other books are in the pipeline, both works of fiction and non-fiction. But finding a publisher is tough, so yes, sometimes they get delayed. And I'm also pursuing my master's in history in
awesome.
Delhi, New Delhi, that is.
Yeah.
So, that's a lot of...
I have started to self-publish my books CreateSpace, so it's worked out pretty well for me. So, Sufian bin Uzair, tell my listeners your websites again and how they can get more information about your books and stuff.
Sure. My own blog is politicalperiscope.com. That's politicalperiscope.com. And the magazine that I was talking about was bravenewworld.in. And regarding my book, The History of Sufism, you can find it easily on Amazon, or if you visit Brave New World or any of my websites, It's always there, featured in the sidebar. I'm pretty attached to my book, so I'll ensure that the cover is there.
And did you say you were only 23?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah. I'm still 23. I turned 23 back in January, wow. New Year's Day.
Wow. So, if all 23-year-olds were like you, oldsters like me could retire, and we could give the activism and
no, we're not going to let you retire. You serve as a huge deal of inspiration.
Dang,
to be honest, I'd be super glad if you could replace Obama and become the president of USA. That's going to be a good moment in history.
Well, Sufi and Ben Uzair, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and keep up the good work, and hopefully this interview will, raise the profile of your websites, which are awesome, by the way, and it makes sense now that I found out you're a web designer.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time, and thanks for featuring me on your show. And please keep up the good work, and just know that you're serving as a source of motivation for people, not just in USA, but also as far as in India, myself included.
Thank you so much. And you keep up the good work, too. Thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Ralph Pointer and Lynn Stewart, a warm, warm, warm welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Well, thank you so much, and welcome you to the new liberated Lynn Stewart arena.
Oh, my gosh, Lynn. We have done many shows about you here on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, and Ralph has been our honored guest several times. So, Lynn, just a wonderful welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. And I want to tell you, when I heard you were being given compassionate release, that was the best news ever for this new year. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And, of course, there's nothing like I've had a month at home, of which I kept telling these people, you know, that's what I need, that wonderful warmth and compassion and caring. And, of course, this old guy who spent every waking hour, and those when he was asleep too, I think, campaigning to get me out of the jaws of real death. And now I'm home. I'm looking forward to fighting cancer as much as you can look forward to it. But I know that it's within me to defeat cancer just like I defeated the U.S. government.
Amazing. And yet Ralph did an amazing job. I had Ralph on last year in February, and he was able to talk to you. And so you were on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox because Ralph gave the answers for you. Excuse me. And so you have been here in spirit, that's for sure.
Well, I gave the answers as best I could. But before I get into that, I want to thank you and so many others for the assistance, the aid, and the encouragement that you gave me to continue. And then my next question is, we have been successful. Do you know anything about cancer?
Well, we have a lot of a lot of alternative therapies that have been successful, that's for sure. And we know, unfortunately, our friend President Chavez didn't defeat it, but he really fought hard against it. But sure, I'm sure that there are many, many, cures out there for it. But I know you probably have gotten a lot of advice, Lynn.
Well, we are, of course, looking into all alternatives because we also know the medical establishment in this country, but we are indeed fortunate in having a guide through it since our youngest daughter is a doctor. And, you know, it's like having the gold card. Doors open, things happen. So I am going up to Sloan Kettering, being seen by an oncologist up there. who is taking a lower profile look at this by reason of the city already has stopped the chemo, which I was undergoing for almost a solid year when I was in prison.
Wow.
So that's making me feel a lot better already. And we're going to see where it all ends up. She's going to try some hormone therapy. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry, Cindy.
No, I'm sorry. A friend of mine's father has cancer, and they've been combining that kind of treatment, you know, traditional treatment with broccoli sprouts. Have you heard about that? And his tumors and cancers have shrank dramatically since they've been using the broccoli sprouts.
Well, we have numerous different suggestions from numerous different sources.
Right.
We have not yet embarked on any of them. I know that my daughter was talking just on Sunday about a multivitamin offense that I would start soon. And that is appealing to me, that I can do. And hello, Cindy, you there?
I'm still here, yes. Can you hear me?
Okay, good. Yes, I can hear you. And, you know, there have been lots. There are people with special elixirs, drinks that they have perfected to fight cancer.
Yes.
And I'm, as I said, I am no great adherent of the American Bar, adherent of them either, but the American Medical Association. So we'll just, you know, we're going to find our way through this, and I hope with the help of our friends, and if anybody has a suggestion for alternative medicine, you know, they can certainly get in touch with me through the Defense Organization and just run it by us, because we have like a group of us that kind of go over all this, some of whom are cancer survivors and some of whom are just the relatives, you know, and to decide what will be next. So I'm trying to figure out what Ralph is doing here, but anyway. His battery is dying, so we're going to take a moment and he's going to shift the phone over, and I'm going to trail along behind.
Yes, well, as Lynn had stated, this is our prime motivation, trying to get our health care taken care of. I have the wrong book.
You got the wrong book? he brought down the charger for my phone, so, me. Yes, we're the usual senior moments, you know.
Right. Oh, you know, like the rest of us.
Talk to me about your campaign. I'm very interested.
Well, first of all, I'm glad to see you're normal like the rest of us. I consider you one of my inspirations and one of my heroes in the struggle. You've long been in the struggle, not just this battle with the legal system and what's happening now. And just the perseverance that you've demonstrated. I'll talk about my campaign a little bit later. But, Lynn, I sent you a book the last time we corresponded, and I sent you a little Christmas card. And I just want to tell you, our holiday card, that it's so hard to find cards for people who are in prison. I had to buy a box of them to send to my friends because what are you going to say to people in prison, you know, like the Cuban Five, you, and other people who are tragically and unnecessarily incarcerated, you know, have Merry Christmas, Happy New Year? No, I said to you, my thoughts for you this year are that freedom and victory, and characteristically of you, you sent back victory for us all, you know, freedom from our oppression. And you were always thinking, you weren't just, and nobody would excuse somebody in your position for, you know, being bitter, being hopeless. But you, whenever I heard from you or Ralph, I was always inspired and motivated to work harder. And You know, there's a new show on Netflix called Orange is the New Black about being women being in prison. What are some of your experiences you had with the other inmates while you were in prison?
He can't operate with me. You see, when he had you, just me. Anyway, well, momentary technical difficulties, but we're good now. Well, I tell you, Cindy, the hardest thing was turning my back on the women I left behind me, some of whom I was very close to, some of whose cases I had actually worked with them on to see if we couldn't get some traction. I learned during my 4 years in prison, three of them at Carr as well, how horrible the legal system, as if I didn't know already, but how lacking the legal system is in this country. You know, the things, and I, of course, I take things with a grain of salt because I've worked for 35 years as a lawyer, but I tell you, the things that people told me, it was so much based on class and race and sex, you know, I mean, in other words, women are expected to be obedient and they're expected to obey the lawyer, expected to obey the judge. And mostly they did, and they ended up being in jail for 20 and 30 years because some boyfriend had talked them into holding a package or just bring this across town for me or something as minor as that, but it put them in the midst of a big conspiracy. So turning my back on them was very, very hard. And it remains hard because one of the conditions of my probation, which is a five-year probation given to me by the judge, is that I'm not allowed to associate with anyone who has a felony. Now, that means everybody in prison, and I know that they read everybody's mail, so I certainly cannot write to my friends there. The best I can do is, subscribe to the various newspapers for them and get other people to keep them up to date on what's happening with me. But, you know, it's very, very hard. Some of them had really very important cases that really needed to be pursued. So I miss them terribly, terribly, terribly. But, you know, I'm still going to fight for them, even if it's only generically, you know, for women in prison. Very, very important segments. Anyway.
Speaking of that, Lynn, maybe you want to just give my listeners a brief refresher about what landed you in prison, because you weren't the only attorney working on the case, but you were the only attorney that went to prison for something that, what I understand, first of all, was false and wasn't unusual for all, I think it was three attorneys that were working on the Blind Sheikhs case. But you're the only one that went to prison, and you're the only woman.
Right, and I can only say I continue to believe that I was used as an example, not only because of the Blind Sheikhs case, which I'll tell you about in a moment, but also I had represented controversial people, controversial to the government, not necessarily to you, me, and the people we know who have the right outlook, but controversial certainly to the government, and I had done so very successfully. So part of it was a warning shot. You know, if we're going to control this thing, and if you don't obey the way we want things to work, we can get you, we can put you in jail, you can end up like Lynn Stewart. What really happened here was that I did represent Sheikh Omar. He was known as the Blind Sheikh. And he was implicated in a plot and then convicted of plotting to destroy New York landmarks, as so many of the Muslim cases, over and over again, based on an informant that wasn't worth salt. I mean, he was just so clearly paid off. One of the lawyers had a blow-up of a $100,000 check that this fellow, Ahmad Salem, had received. Anyway, we lost that trial, we lost the appeal, but Ramsey Clark, myself, and Abdeen Jabara continued to represent the Sheikh while he was in jail. After about a year or so, the government put special administrative measures in place which restricted him, the Sheikh that is, to almost being incommunicado. He was not, he was more like so many others in solitary confinement, but being blind and not speaking English, he might as well have been. And we continued to visit because, you know, we knew that when you represent a political prisoner who is the target of the government, you have to protect them once they are in prison because they are so vulnerable at that point. It mm-hmm. is interesting that what was the gravamen of my offense, was that I made a press release on his behalf. They wanted him to be totally silent. And I made a press release, but before I had made one, Ramsey had made numerous press releases, you know, using his prestige and his influence in the Middle East. And Abdine Jabara had done likewise, but it was only me. We argued unsuccessfully in the lower court and on appeal that this was what is known as selective prosecution, just as you outlined it, Cindy. You know, right. And as I said, I think they did that to send a message to lawyers that, you know, you do it our way or we're going to make sure we get you. And they got me indeed, and I did serve 4 years. There was also, the part that really enraged people that loved me and who felt my case was unjust at the beginning and continued to feel that way was that after the appeal, the appeals court sent the case back to the judge and said, give her some more time.
I know.
After the government appealed the sentence, which they thought was too low. And so then the judge obliged and gave me a 10-year sentence. So actually my time in jail was supposed to end in 2018. So that's why this is, even given the sad part of it being a release for health reasons, serious, serious health reasons, but I am out at least 4 years earlier than they ever wanted me to be. And, you know, I intend to make the most of that. I have a lot of things I need to talk about. Ralph would like to say something.
On the medical question, I like to remind people that the week that the Second Circuit insisted Lynn go to jail, she was scheduled for surgery in New York City, and it was 18 months before she got that surgery. And the attending physician said it was the worst case he had ever seen due to the delay. And then when cancer reappeared, it was 4 to 5 months after they knew the cancer was back again before she got treatment in jail. Therefore, I use this as one example to say that we don't have prison camps in America for political prisoners. We have death camps, and they do kill people by denying them medical treatment. But when I spoke about this to Lynn, she was in jail, and she says, well, how should I expect decent medical treatment while I'm in prison when so many people who are not in prison, the American people, aren't getting decent medical treatment? So I'm hurting, but I'm certainly not surprised. And this is the Lynn we know and love.
Absolutely. That's why so many people out here were fighting for her release. But one thing I want to talk about, and thank you for the synopsis of your persecution, but you're also having an event on Valentine's Day in New York City that I wish I could be at, but, you know, unfortunately I can't make it, but I will get to New York soon to be able to see you in person. But tell us about the event on February 14th in New York City.
Well, this is our baby, this event, and it is so important because so many people were involved in supporting the Bill of Rights and Lynn Stewart as she represented the Bill of Rights, that we have a movement together. And this is what got Lynn out, and we want to keep that going. So it's Love, Liberty, and Lynn on Valentine's Day, February 14th. All of those who participated, those who would like to get involved in the movement, join us and let us begin to build this force. And as Lynn puts it, can stop this corporate juggernaut that's crushing us all in every way. And so this is February 14th. If you can come to in New York City, it's a jazz church, St. Peter's Church on 54th and Lexington Avenue, 6 to 10. Please come early. Make it 5, and we're going to all have great entertainment, great, you know, we're going to try to be short on speeches and a lot of high on, long on entertainment and love.
I know it's also, is it also a fundraiser for your medical expenses?
Yes, it is, without being shy about it. You know, cancer is an expensive proposition, and I am attending at Sloan Kettering. And even though, you know, hopefully I will have insurance, although I'm still fighting with the government over that, which may be our next big battle, still in all, there are other expenses, and they don't cover everything, of course. So
right.
We will have substantial expenses, and certainly most of the alternatives, which we talked about earlier, Cindy, they are not covered at all by government insurance. Those are, you're responsible. And although many, many of the people who are proposing these to me are willing to go the freight for it, in other words, pay for whatever it takes or donate it, still in all, there are others I might want to do which do require a large expenditure. So we're trying to work this from all angles and try not to be. But the 14th is just going to be an outpouring. And, you know, one of the remarkable things, and which I know you would be happy about as well, is, you know, the left is so fractured, so many personal, what would you call it, personalities get in the way of each other. And
right.
It seems to not be so around my case. Everybody joined in. Everybody recognized that this was something they could all support, whether they are ultra left or just moderately liberal, they all came together. And individuals who wrote, you know, I got so many letters, Cindy. I can't, it just, it brings me to tears even at this moment. You know, the people who wrote to me, who took the time, an ex-Vietnam vet, I know this would be close to your heart. He was living in his pickup truck camper in the Cascade Mountains. He wrote, he says, I don't have very much money. He says, actually, a stamp is an expense for me, but I just wanted to write to you and thank you for being a stand-up person. You know, things like that keep you going when you're in jail or out of jail because, you know, it's heartfelt and real. You know, here's this guy, I mean, whose country has turned their back on him. After service of that nature in that dirty war, just you say, I gotta keep on keeping on because that's what it's about. And you know it too. I'll tell you, everybody from Texas knew who Cindy Sheehan was when I started showing them your book with the autograph. They said, oh, she's the one who camped out at George Bush's place. I said, she sure did.
Well, Lynn, I just want to say, Lynn and Ralph, you should not be shy about, you know, asking people for contributions because you have been fighting for us for decades. And it's about, and it's, I think many people are happy to have the chance to repay you a little bit for that. But, you know, as a person of conscience, and you guys know this too, it's a wonder that we have a little touch of insomnia thinking about, I could barely think about you being in prison, sick, about, you know, my other friends who were unjustly prisoned, the people that our country is occupying and bombing and oppressing. You know, how can you sleep a nice, warm, in a comfy bed when you know so much injustice is going on? So it's so important for us to support each other in the struggle because it's going to take all of us to overthrow this really crappy system. You should be able to walk into a good clinic and get good health care and not have to fight for your right to health care. It's a human right.
Well, you, from your mouth to the universe's ear, This is what was promised by Mr. Obama. This is what the left said that they were supporting. And Mr. Obama said, it's off the table and we're all back where we started from. Yes, we have to do that. But we're asking people to send their donations to the same place they've been sending them, to the Lynn Stewart Organization, 1070 Dean Street, Brooklyn, New York.
And there's also a way to do it online.
Yes, there is a way to do it online.
Like an Indiegogo or something like that campaign. Yes. And I'll certainly post that link for sure on my newsletter and my website. And I always encourage people regularly to write to you, because you did tell me in the very beginning of your excuse me, I don't know what's wrong with my voice. Lynn, you told me in the beginning of your imprisonment that the letters, even though you got so many, the letters really were keeping your spirits up.
Yes, and for further information as to what's going on, they can look at lynnstewart.org, and all of the information is there. There's a link to the Indigo Go-Go. I'm still learning language.
For contributions.
It's all on the website.
Well, you need to let us know if I think I get all of the information online, but you all have my email, and you can let me know if there's anything that you need, and we can get it out there in the interwebs, and get you some urgent attention. But I'm going to have to let you guys go soon. But is there anything else that you want to tell my listeners about your experience, about being home, or how was it when you finally got to see your family? I saw the video of you coming to the airport, and it just made me cry, tears running down my face.
Your reaction, I think everybody I've spoken to said, I wept tears of joy. I never even knew what that meant until I saw you at the airport. I saw you hugging those children, my grandchildren. There's no question about it. And, every day, it's an adjustment, though, Cindy, to go from a place where you deal every minute of every day with arbitrary authority. People ordering you around and telling you, and then the next guy says something diametrically opposed to what the first guy said, of being moved to a hospital in shackles and chains and belly chains, to go home where there's, freedom is just phenomenal. And it's a little everyday things. Last week my daughter-in-law, where we live, and I were making collard greens. And just to have a good knife to cut things up with, just to get, real butter is such a, the little things that make life so worthwhile, and that keep us all going in our daily lives so we can go out and do the big things we know we have to do. And so far, I'm surviving very nicely, and we're hoping there could be a West Coast. You think you're having a West Coast trip in the future? If the probation department and if my doctors say it's advisable. So, we're really trying to keep up with all that I feel must be done in this very, very imperfect world we live in.
And we have so few victories in the movement. And I'm just so glad that you're able to celebrate one, and that we are, in a small way, able to celebrate with you. We just really have to grab onto those victories and not just celebrate them, but learn from them and the success that we finally have, because we're not usually, I hate to say this, I'm running for governor, and I'm hoping to you know, motivate people to take control of their own lives and to for us to work together to make this state and this country and this world a better place for everybody, not just the 85 people who own more wealth than 3.5 billion people on this planet. I still don't understand that. I don't understand how 85 people can, you know, oppress us and kill us and destroy this planet. And here we just sit like, oh, okay. But just thank you for giving us, in the people in the movement, in the struggle, something to really celebrate and be happy and cry tears of joy instead of tears of pain and tears of frustration.
Well, thank you for giving us opportunity to support you and your position. And we must never forget our people who went before us fighting for freedom. We call them political prisoners. And we just got one out. We have 149 more to go. And let's keep them in mind with progressive governors and progressive government and progressive people supporting these ideals. Thanks again, Cindy.
Well, Lynn and Ralph, we love you so much. And give us your website one more time.
Lynn Stewart, that's L-Y-N-N-E, and Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, .org.
And just congratulations and love to you. And thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. And I hope that we can talk and meet once again in person soon.
Absolutely, Cindy. I look forward to it. And thank you again for having us.
Much
oh, gosh. It's our honor. It's our honor and privilege, and finally, that we can do this.
Well, that's the Soapbox for today. I hope you were as amazed and inspired by our three guests as I was. And please visit Sufian's website, bravenewworld.in, and support Lynn Stewart if you can. Like I say on the interview, she's done so much for us. We need to give back to her in any way possible. As always, I'd like to thank Don DeBar. I'd like to thank my itinerant producer, Mikey, who occasionally schedules guests for me. I'd like to thank my sister and assistant, Dee Dee Miller, who helps me with the newsletter and promoing the show. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening. I'm Cindy Sheehan with a bit of a cold here in Vacaville, California. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.